today, after the US election, what are the implications? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, working on this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today I'm joined by Salvatore Babanz. Hi Salvatore, how are you going?
Oh, good. Thanks for having me back.
Well, I really appreciate your time. And, you know, after all your exposure on the ABC, to spend a bit of time with me. What I'm interested in today is, let's assume that the Biden thing does tick over and fall into place eventually. I'd like to think about some of the implications and consequences, perhaps of foreign policy and specifically, sure. You know, some of the international issues that are buzzing around, because there could be some quite important implications and things to consider.
Well, let's first remember that presidents really have their field day on foreign policy. Presidents can't do much in domestic policy without the help of Congress. Biden will have a Republican Senate as a breakwater against any domestic policy initiatives. He won't be able to appoint Supreme Court justices. He'll have problems even getting his federal court appointments through. I mean, it's going to be deadlocked as far as domestic policy goes. But on foreign policy, as Donald Trump has shown, a president can do a lot of things with very little cooperation from Congress. And I think we're going to see a very different tone in foreign policy under Joe Biden. And let's not forget Kamala Harris, who will also be involved in foreign policy making. The number one thing, I mean, all the Australians ask about Paris Accords, will the U.S. rejoin the Paris Climate Accords? Of course, Joe Biden would rejoin the Paris Climate Accords. I don't think that's very consequential. It will happen. But while we are talking about rejoining an accord, if he rejoins it as a presidential action, it does not have the force of law in the United States. So it's simply his personal pledge of goodwill. It's a non-binding accord. So he doesn't actually have to do anything. And U.S. carbon emissions have been falling more rapidly than either Canada's or Australia's, despite the fact that Australia and Canada are, you know, paid up members of the Paris Club. So, you know, I'm not sure what practical effect it will have. Biden will switch the focus of Middle East policymaking back towards traditional channels. I mean, he will employ the old guard of Middle East analysts. Trump has had Jared Kushner running his Israel policy. Well, I'm telling you right now, Hunter Biden will not be in charge of the Arab-Israeli peace process. And instead, the professionals will come back. And the professionals will say, we need a two-state solution. We need Palestinians on board. The Palestinian Authority, look, I don't think I'm revealing anything here, is an extraordinarily corrupt, stick-in-the-mud organization that simply is not prepared to do anything. And they're certainly not prepared for democracy in Palestine. They don't want to hold any new elections. I think they'll have the same kind of stalemate in the Arab-Israeli peace process as we had from 2000 up until, from the collapse of the Oslo Accords all the way up until really, Donald Trump got the UAE to recognize Israel, UAE and Bahrain. Trump, I think, was moving towards Saudi Arabia recognizing Israel. That would have been a big coup. I doubt that'll happen under Biden. In fact, it probably won't happen under Biden because Biden will, again, almost certainly seek to reopen the joint agreement, the JCPOA agreement with Iran, the Iran nuclear deal, as we call it. If he does that, then, well, you know, no Saudi Arabia cooperation, right? The Saudis, the last thing they want to see is American cooperation with Iran. So that's kind of the big picture until we get to Asia. Do you want me to keep monologuing or do you want to butt in there?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you a question just to give you a chance to take your breath. Hang on, let me just push that one first. Yes, now very, very interesting. And I guess the Asian angle is also pretty critical. Of course, you've got India, and there's a strong India connection now with the U.S. Vice President. How do you see that playing out? And I guess China as well in terms of...
Yeah, India and China are going to be... So India and China are the place where there will be changes in U.S. foreign policy. Donald Trump was very ready to break the conventions on China. It went so far as to take a phone call from Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen, even before he became president, that had the American policymaking community apoplectic that, you know, it was going to cause nuclear war or something. Trump's approach to the whole, you know, greater China region, and I know some people don't like that term, but including North Korea, which is under Chinese sway and such, has been very aggressive, very unconventional. And Biden is, you know, much more surrounded by conventional foreign policy experts who want to return to a more conventional American China policy. And look, let's face it, Trump's tariffs on China, I mean, I'm no trade lawyer, but they're probably illegal. I suspect they violate U.S. law in the sense that he probably exceeded his authority. Now, he does have authority under U.S. law to impose emergency tariffs and to impose national security restrictions and on export licenses, things like that. But he's really pushed those tools to the breaking point. I expect one of Biden's first actions will be to call a truce in the trade war with China, roll back some of that. He'll have to be continue to be firm on human rights in China. I think it would be politically impossible for a Democratic president to stop condemning human rights abuses in China, but there'll be less support for Taiwan, less emphasis on, you know, that full course press on China. There will also be, and here's, I think, the crucial thing, some pullback or likely pressure on India. Under the Trump administration, India has been, you know, favorite country number one. Donald Trump has been eager, to say the least, to recruit India and its leader Narendra Modi as a new American security partner. I won't go as far as say ally. There's not going to be a formal alliance between the U.S. and India under any president, but because India won't have that. But security partner, yes. Now, Kamala Harris, of course, is one half Indian by birth or by genetics. She identifies much more as African American, but of course, being half Indian, people look to her on India policies. And she's repeatedly and routinely taken what we might call an INC, an Indian National Congress elite intellectual Indian approach to Indian affairs. That is, she has condemned the BJP, that is the party behind Narendra Modi, for pushing through its citizenship bill, for pushing through the act that gave citizenship to non-Muslim refugees from neighboring countries. She's condemned their actions in Kashmir. So finally, after 70, little over 70 years after partition, India finally regularized the status of Jammu and Kashmir, just making it a regular part of India and eliminating the restrictions that had been in place for 70 years, more than 70 years, on who could move there and who could buy land there and such. They said, no, look, it's been Indian for 70 years. It's going to be India. It's now part of India. Now, she was one of those members of the intelligentsia who condemned that as a unilateral action to undermine the peace in South Asia. As if there's been peace in South Asia. I mean, India and Pakistan have been at war at least three times, so it's hard to call that a peace. But she has really bought the Indian intelligentsia's version of India, which is that the BJP is a right-wing, religious Hindu nationalist, discriminatory, bordering on fascist party. I mean, I've had Indian intellectuals tell me outright, there is no democracy in India, and tell me outright, the BJP is a fascist organization. And these views are widely held among intellectuals in India. And because those intellectuals in India and in the Indian American community are much more likely to be, not just much more likely, they're all tied into Democratic Party circles. That thinking infuses the Democratic Party. So I think it'll be much more difficult for the United States to pursue, I think there'll just be much less interest in the United States in pursuing security cooperation with India under a Biden-Harris administration. Biden will naturally look to Harris to lead his India policy, and she seems very committed to being critical of the current government in India. And I want to be clear, in my own view, there's nothing fascistic about the BJP. I mean, it is a conservative party that people who are not conservatives may dislike, but they've had sound policies. They've done a lot of good reforms. They've done some maybe less good reforms. But overall, it's a liberal democratic country that is pursuing reasonable economic and social policies. But Harris doesn't see it that way.
Okay. And the other question I had then was the issue of the digital situation, Facebook and the other players, because there could well be some changes there. There was an attempt perhaps to ratchet them down, but maybe now they'll be given a free hand, right?
Well, I mean, the lawsuit, the Department of Justice lawsuit to against Google, accusing it of being a monopoly, that will go forward because that's an administrative process. I'm not even sure that that was politically motivated. But I think this digital issue is the one area where U.S.-Australian relations will be affected by the change in government. I constantly have Australians tell me, well, this is the most consequential election ever. And I say, for Australia? And they say, oh, yes, it's going to change everything. And I ask them, change what? And people struggle to find any way in which who's in power in Washington will affect Australia. Because, of course, the U.S.-Australia alliance is secure. The Marines are going to stay in Darwin. The U.S. is still going to do freedom of navigation operations in the South China Sea. The U.S. is still going to remain committed to a broad international liberal order, et cetera, et cetera. All these things are the same. What will change, though, is that, the Facebooks and the Zuckerbergs of the world are on good terms with the Democratic Party. And Australia is actively seeking to force Google and Facebook and Twitter to pay for Australian news, that is to pay Australian news outlets for covering their stories or including their stories in their search results. Australia is seeking to increase the privacy regulation on the internet giants. Australia is seeking, or at least thinking about, ways it can prevent Amazon from more aggressively leveraging its presence in Australia. Well, that's Jeff Bezos and the Washington Post you're talking about when you're talking about Amazon. The big tech companies are, I wouldn't say democratic to the core, but they certainly lean towards the Democratic Party in a big way. And that might be a problem for Australia, as Australia seeks, in the wake of the digital platforms review last year and the legislation that's now coming through the pipeline this year. The Trump administration has had no pushback on that, at least nothing public. A Biden administration might stand up for these companies in a way that we haven't seen yet.
Right. Very interesting. And, I don't think that people fully understand the implications of that switch, right? Because there does seem to be a widening divide, if what you're saying right, in terms of what Australia is thinking of doing with its regard to its digital platforms and the international players. And I guess that the bottom line will be those international players don't need Australia. Australia probably needs them.
Australia is going down the European route. The European Union has thoroughly regulated, or at least attempted to regulate, its internet, and it's gotten a second-class internet as a result. And you and I did a program about that a while back. Australia is going down that route. It hasn't gone down the route yet, but the legislation in the pipeline is going that way. Now, the European Union can take care of itself, right? I mean, if the U.S. pressures the European Union, the European Union pushes back. And economically, well, okay, the U.S. slaps some tariffs on French wine and the French slap a tax on Apple's profits and, everyone just goes along. Australia, of course, is much more vulnerable to pressure from the United States than is the European Union. Now, I don't think it'll come to that, right? I don't think we're going to see a Biden administration slapping tariffs on Australian wine going to the U.S. But there are many opportunities for pressure behind the scenes that you and I never see, but it has to do with all the little forms of cooperation. I mean, for example, even the Trump administration took refugees off the detention center. Which island is that? Manus Island Detention Center. And, did the Australian government a favor of taking the refugees, right? Well, will that sort of cooperation be forthcoming? I mean, this is also the sort of thing when I talk about India. The United States and India just signed an agreement to allow India to access U.S. Intelligence data, detailed mapping data, you know, satellite positioning data. Well, could Indian access be suspended if the Biden-Harris administration wants to express displeasure at one of those actions? Well, it could very well. And in the same way, could something Australia needs, some cooperation it needs in an international forum, be suspended because Australia is, you know, not taking the Democratic Party line on digital platforms? Sure, it can happen. And we may never even know it happened. It may happen behind the scenes, but it will. It is, I think, the biggest threat. I'm not going to say it's a problem, because it may never be a problem. But if there's a single fault line in the U.S.-Australia relationship, it is this fault line over digital platforms. And we'll see if that fault actually slips and opens, or if it, you know, stays firm and, you know, everything goes along smoothly.
Right. Yes. And I guess my last question then, Salvatore, for today is, you know, there was a bit of a debate in Australia about Australia having to choose China versus the US, right? I mean, you and I probably would have a different view on whether that's true or not. But does that dynamic change, do you think, in terms of that three-way relationship as a result of the...
No, look, China loves that rhetoric of Australia should choose China, should stop choosing the US over China. Australia is America's lapdog. Australia should assert its independence. Should assert its independence from the US, et cetera, et cetera. Look, that's all hot air. there's no choice to be made between China and the United States. Australia's problems with China are Australia's own problems. I don't believe that Scott Morrison demanded a coronavirus inquiry because Donald Trump told him to. I think that's a fantastical idea. Now, it may be true. I mean, I'm not there in the Liberal Party rooms, but I really don't think that was the cause. Australia's problems with China have to do with, you know, Australia's assertions of independence. It has to do with money in Australian politics. So right now we have the Australia's Foreign Relations Bill coming through the legislative process, and that's to quash Victoria's Belt and Road Agreement. Well, that's not the United States telling the federal government to take on Daniel Andrews. I mean, the United States doesn't even know who Dan Andrews is. This is a domestic issue. Australia having problems with Chinese money, bribing politicians in Australia, that has nothing to do with the United States. The issues over academic freedom at Australian universities, the Drew Pavlou case at University of Queensland, again, these have nothing to do with the United States. This is not about Australia choosing the US or China. This is about Australia's China problem. And Australia's China problem is entirely homegrown. Australia is going to have to deal with it one way or another, no matter who's in the White House.
Very good. Well, I appreciate your insights today. And I think the Indian connection is the one that I should be watching the most close, because I think that could be where a lot of the action is.
I'm certainly going to be watching it myself.
Thanks very much. Thanks for spending some time with us. And I hope you'll come back and spend a bit more time with us, and, you know, a little more frequently than the last few months, because we missed you.
Always at your disposal, Martin.
Thanks very much. Take care.